Hello. Tonight we look at the growing reputation of the late New York street artist Jean-Michel Basquiat as a major new exhibition opens in the UK. Juliet Stevenson tells us about flying on wires in a groundbreaking new play told from the point of view of someone suffering a stroke. I speak to the final nominee for the National Short Story Award, Jenny Fagan, and as Radio 1 prepares to celebrate its 50th birthday, I turn the turntables on veteran DJ Tony Blackburn for an insight into how pirate radio changed the way we listen to music forever.
I saw the film, The Boat That Rocked. I hated it because it made us out to be all a load of drunken, stupid fools out there, and we weren't. The whole idea of it was we were enjoying ourselves out there, but at the same time, we all knew that we were going to change broadcasting. It couldn't go back to what it was.
More from Tony Blackburn a little later. Sometimes a new exhibition opens that makes you think about how much has changed. When we watch films and TV shows set in the 1960s, they usually have a sparkling 60s pop soundtrack too. So it's easy to forget, if you weren't there, that pop music couldn't really be heard anywhere except on the records you bought from a poor quality signal from Radio Luxembourg or on illegal pirate radio broadcasts from ships in the North Sea. When the BBC finally did decide to embrace the youthquake, they brought in 24-year-old Radio Caroline DJ Tony Blackburn to launch the new Radio 1 in 1967. And as the station now prepares to celebrate its 50th birthday next week, Tony came in to tell me how it all began.
It really all started in 1964 when the pirate ships came about, and they really bought about 20, you know, well, it wasn't 24 hours. We normally went on at 6 in the morning till about 8 in the evening. But before that, we had the light programme, and we had about 3/4 of an hour of pop music a day. And that's all that the BBC actually broadcast on the light programme. And then if you wanted more popular music, you had to go to Radio Luxembourg, which came from Luxembourg, of course, but it faded in and out, so you couldn't really hear it very well. So that's all it was, really. So that's what I was brought up with.
What was the BBC's attitude to the new Radio 1? You know, the presenters, people like you, and to pop music when they did finally bring you on?
Well, it was... They were forced to do the radio station. I mean, the whole idea of the pirate radio ships, Radio Caroline and Radio London, was to bring about commercial radio, which didn't happen because the Labour government got in. If the Conservatives had got in at the time, then commercial radio would have come about. But it didn't, and the Labour Party got in, and, of course, they forced, really, the BBC into opening up a popular music station. And the BBC, they took it really well, and they welcomed us in. And I remember it was the Flower Power era, and we came off the pirate ships, and I remember coming into the BBC wearing a suit, and some of the producers there were wearing flowery shirts to try and make us feel welcome. It was very strange.
And you were trying to fit in.
Yeah, I was trying to fit in. I thought, well, we put a suit on, you know, and a lot of us did. And they welcomed us in, and they said to particularly Kenny Everett and myself, they said, what do you need to recreate this sound out in the North Sea? And so we designed the studio because nobody used to put their own records on. So Kenny and I designed the studio. We told them what we needed and they went along with it. You know, we had turntables in those days, which we don't have now. So they very sensibly welcomed us in.
I want to take you back to how you got into DJing.
Yes.
On Radio Caroline and what it was like, because it was the beginning of that age of the DJ as a very powerful figure, wasn't it?
Well, it was, yes. I mean, I wanted to get into DJing because I wanted to be a singer. I was a singer with a dance band and guitarist in Bournemouth, and I wanted to make records. And I thought, well, if I become a disc jockey, I'll get closer to the record business. And I read an advert in the New Musical Express wanting DJs, and I hadn't heard Radio Caroline. I'd heard about it. But down in Poole, we couldn't get it. It was too far away. But I saw a documentary on the television about it, and I got fascinated by it, and I sent in a tape. They were asking for DJs, and I went in on the Friday to do an audition at 6 Chesterfield Gardens in Mayfair. And 2 hours later, they said, when can you start? And they said, could you start the next day, I think it was.
Yes, indeed. Good morning, everyone. Tony Blackburn here with you, feeling a little under the weather this morning. We've got about an 8-force gale out there blowing, so I'm strapped in the seat this morning.
I was 21 years old. I was out there on the North Sea. It was just a terrific adventure. I loved every moment of it, and I'd never been a disc jockey before, but I took to it very easily. I've always found broadcasting, particularly radio, which I love, absolutely adore and still do, I found it a very natural medium. I've never been nervous on it. It's just come totally naturally to me. So sitting out there playing records and records that I loved and knowing that we were pioneering something. I knew at the time this was going to alter the whole of broadcasting.
Did you really?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, I thought. I remember going out from Harwich on a little tender boat that we used to go out from. We used to have to go through customs because officially we were going to Holland, but for 3 years we never got there. And so we, and then when we came back, we had to go through customs. But I remember seeing the little ship in August, it was, when I joined in 1964, and seeing this little boat, the Mi Amigo, Radio Caroline, bobbing around on the North Sea. And I thought, oh, this is fantastic because it's causing the government so many problems.
Because here we are 50 years later. Yes. And, you know, pop music has become arguably the biggest part of mainstream culture. Mm. Did you really see that coming in the way radio would expand to be mainly about pop music?
I thought it would bring about a change, yes. I saw the film, the Boat That Rocked. I hated it because it made us out to be all a load of drunken, stupid fools out there, and we weren't. The whole idea of it was we were enjoying ourselves out there, but at the same time, we all knew that we were going to change broadcasting. It couldn't go back to what it was.
You essentially do the same thing, don't you? I mean, yes. Would you say that you've changed in 50 years, or is the thing is you feel you are essentially the same?
I think I've got a little bit better. I think I've got a little bit better than I did. I mean, one time it was just a load of string of cheesy jokes and things. Whereas I think now the audience, as they get older, I don't think they realise how much I love the music, and particularly soul music.
So, can we talk about that? Because you have been a lifelong champion of soul and the Northern soul scene through the 80s, filling club nights. Stevie Wonder personally thanked you. Why is it so important to you, and how did you get introduced to it?
Well, my dad loved soul music. He was a doctor, and he loved Rik Petit by Jackie Wilson. I think it was the only record he had. So I don't know what it is. It's something in me. I've always loved soul music and Motown and Philadelphia and things like that. And I toured with Diana Ross and the Supremes, and I've always had a terrific admiration because they have had to struggle to get the music played. And when I came to Radio 1, I was just amazed how little Motown music and stuff was played. So when I picked the music for The Breakfast Show, I made sure that a lot of the music that I love, I put in there. Because it, to me, it's just beautiful, wonderful music. And these artists have always been very special to me. So I've always tried to push that music as much as I possibly can. And I still do. You know, I still do. I mean, I've got a soul program on Radio London. And at any opportunity within the shows that I compile myself, and I choose most of my own music now, I make sure that there's a lot of soul music in there because it's happy music. The music I play is what I call pop soul, really.
Do you regret your jokey persona? Perhaps it's misled people over the years who might have taken you more seriously.
I don't really, because I've never taken myself seriously. I remember talking to John Peel once, who always had a slight... He always found me a bit difficult, I think.
That's a very diplomatic way of putting it. I think it's more than that, isn't it? You felt he didn't like you.
I don't think he... Yes, I probably... I don't know. I don't think he didn't really like me. I think I made a mistake when I joined Radio 1, and I meant it seriously. I thought that he should have been on Radio 3 because he was more... The music that he was playing wasn't really, I didn't think, suitable for Radio 1. And I didn't mean it in a derogatory fashion. But nevertheless, he did take it rather seriously. But he did say to me privately, he said, you have done so much for soul music and nobody's recognised that. And I said to him, would you say that publicly? And he said, oh, no.
You'll be aware that while there's celebrations about the 50th anniversary of Radio 1 now, there's been a period of real scandal about... Jimmy Savile in particular, and sort of sexual misbehaviour in the 60s and 70s at Radio 1. You were first put on an enforced break from the BBC after challenging their account of a 1970s investigation in the aftermath of Jimmy Savile's revelations. Can I ask how you feel about that whole period, and indeed if you feel the truth has all been put out?
Well, that is the only thing that I don't comment on anymore. You know, it was an unfortunate incident, and I'm back at the BBC, and I'm very glad to be back at an organisation that for 50 years I've loved. We've agreed to, you know, move on. Let's put it that way. You know, I have done nothing wrong at all, and that's why I'm back here at the BBC.
That's fine. And just to be clear, because I wasn't talking about anything said against you. It was more about the climate of what's been said about Savile, but you don't feel you can talk about Savile.
I can't. I think it's all been said, and it was one of those things. I wasn't a particular admirer of his. In fact, I wasn't an admirer of his at all.
50 years on from the start of Radio 1, do you think about that day? And how do you look back on it?
Oh, I mean, I remember every single moment of it.
Now, with the clock ticking slowly up to 7 a.m., It's going to be time to welcome Radio 1's first daily show on 247 metres medium wave whilst breakfast special continues on Radio 2. 10 seconds to go before Radio 1, Tony Blackburn.
We had the theme 1 playing, which was that was the theme to Radio 1. And then it came up to the 7 o'clock. It was a Saturday. And we put the jingle on, which was a pirate radio jingle, actually. They even used the same jingles that we were using out on Radio London. It said the voice of Radio 1, and then I came on.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to the exciting new sound of Radio 1.
And with the theme music, the dog Arnold barking, and then went into Flowers in the Rain, and it just went from there, really. You know, it just went very, very well. The critics were very pleased with it, and, you know, the station, I thought, sounded really good.
Number 3, The Freak, and the Radio 1 Fun 30, and it comes, of course, from the movie's called Flowers in the Rain. 3 minutes now past 7 o'clock on the first of the Tony Blackburn shows from Radio 1.
Radio 1, Tony Blackburn.
The fascinating Tony Blackburn, remembering the birth of Radio 1 on the 30th of September 1967. And you can hear Tony every Saturday morning when he presents the much improved rejuvenated Sounds of the 60s on Radio 2. Now, in the last few days, we've brought you interviews with 4 of the 5 shortlisted authors for this year's BBC National Shorts.